But before we do that, I wanted to talk about discipleship this morning. And I thank Stuart for reading that. And what made me think about that is as we're doing this planning and taking a look at our situation, you know, we have the need literally to count the costs, as Stuart read this morning. But we can't, you know, if we're gonna as we begin work together, then the things that we do collectively as a body, you know, before we make major decisions and before we make major commitments, we have to make sure that we're in agreement, right? And that we have counted the cost up front, and that this is something that we can do. We'll get to that more later, but we're going to look this morning at that and other things that Jesus says about discipleship. And we'll start in Luke, but not in Luke 14, but in Luke chapter 9. In Luke chapter 9, if you would go ahead and turn there with me. So we're going to consider two different kinds of teachings on discipleship this morning. Jesus had some instance where he gave straightforward teaching, and we're going to say straightforward, but it's not always straightforward. You know, as the passage that Stuart started with is not exactly straightforward, and people kind of wonder about it sometimes. But there are what I would consider more direct teachings, and then there are parables. And we're gonna take a look at the teachings, and then we're gonna take a look at the parables this morning. So in Luke chapter nine, we see here after the feeding of the 5,000, and Peter's confession of Jesus as the Christ, that there in verse 23, well, first in 22, after talking about what it is that awaits him, and saying the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised the third day. He said to them, then he said to them all, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. But what profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and is himself destroyed or lost? For whoever is ashamed of me and my words, of him the Son of Man will be ashamed when he comes in his own glory and in his Father's and of the holy angels. A well-known passage. We have versions of it in Matthew and in Mark. Right? If anyone's going to be a follower of Jesus Christ, if anyone desires to come after him, at the heart of that is self-denial. Let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. And we don't just take up our cross once. We don't just take it up when we decide to become a Christian. But we have to continually do it each and every day. Right? The essence of what it is to be a Christian, that we're not going to, it's not my will that matters. But it's God's will, and God's will expressed through Jesus Christ. And so what we are doing is allowing Jesus then control of our life. That it shouldn't be what I desire, but what Jesus would have of me. And of course, is there a sentiment in the world that's more directly opposed to what the world would have you believe today, right? I mean, the idea today is you should be able to decide everything. It's important. It's all about you. You decide what it is for your life to be important. You decide fulfillment on your own basis, whatever it is that matters to you. And you pursue that. And you have the complete right of self-determination. And no one else can tell you what is good or what is right or what you should be doing. Right? That's the attitude of the world. And we know where that comes from. Right? Because those are some of the same things that Satan tempted Jesus with in the desert. Right? The idea that we are free to determine that for ourselves and to find our own path and to find the right path. And that's gonna lead us to fulfillment. That's a lie. That's a lie. In the end, God, who made us, knows what it is that we need. And so when we submit ourselves to Jesus Christ and allow God to rule our lives through him, now what we are doing is allowing the one who made us and who knows what we need and who knows what's good for us to guide us. And that will take us to where we need to go. That will take us to what we've been made for, what we've been created for. And so we have the paradox there in verse 24. Whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. You know, it really is a paradox that the secret to life and the secret to happiness and fulfillment in this world is giving up your life, giving it up to God, being willing to give it up even for others in the service of others. Because what is it then that God, if we submit ourselves to God, what is it that God tells us to do? Well, God tells us to love other people. God tells us to love other people and to do what's best for them, to put their good even above our own. And for those who do that and who take that path, they know that the life that they've gained is so much better than the life that was given up. In the end, the promise of selfishness and of self-fulfillment is empty. Well, the greatest fulfillment that we have is going to come by giving rather than receiving. Right? And the picture there, what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and he himself and loses his soul? Loses his soul. We're going to come back to that picture in terms of the parable that we'll see. That we'll see in a few minutes. Okay, but go ahead now and turn over to Luke chapter 14, where Stuart read from us. And we have this passage in beginning with verse 25. It says, great multitudes went with him, and he turned and he said to them, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his mother, his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. Strong language from Jesus. And what we understand that what he means is we can't put anyone in our family, our father, mother, wife, children, brothers, sisters, in a primary place before God, before our concern and our care for God and for Jesus. We cannot do that. Well, we can. People can. And those are good things. Those are certainly people that we have to care for, people we have to give honor to, and people that we have responsibilities toward. But they cannot be more important to us than God and our Savior Jesus. Because if they do, what happens? Have you known people who consider themselves to be Christians, but who put family members first in front of them? before their service to God? You know, I'll serve God, but if there's something that's come up that my family needs from me, or that my children need, or this thing or that thing, God will understand. And maybe we'll miss on Sundays for some types of events, or you know, these other things we have to do them for the sake of my kids, or for the sake of my spouse, or for the sake of my family. How many times in those instances have you seen? Have you seen the family, the members that you thought that maybe they were sacrificing for, lost, fallen away because of the weakness of the example that's been set? The parents who sacrificed worship and sacrificed service to God for the sake of their children see the children then not come to honor and respect and submit to God as they should, because they haven't seen Him made first and made the priority in the others' lives. And the truth is, if we make God first, and if we set God first, are we going to neglect our family? Are we going to neglect our mother and father and our spouses and our children? No, because God, in service to God, means that we will take care of them. It means that we will love them. It means that we will do what's best for them. And do what's best for them, especially in regards to their spiritual development. So another paradox, right? If we put God over those closest to us, well, then those closest to us will benefit from that. Whereas if we don't, if we put them over God in our lives, then too often they will suffer too. So yes, simple message is, in both of these, both in all of Jesus' teaching here, Jesus must come first. Jesus must come first, even over what we would have for ourselves. Okay, and then going back to Luke chapter 9, let's take a look at some of his other teaching here. Luke chapter 9, verse 57. It says, now it happened as they journeyed on the road that someone said to him, Lord, I will follow you wherever you go. And Jesus said to him, foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Then he said to another, follow me. But he said, Lord, let me first go and bury my father. Jesus said to him, let the dead bury their own dead, but you go and preach the kingdom of God. Another also said, Lord, I will follow you, but let me first go and bid them farewell who are at my house. Jesus said to them, no one, having put his hand to the plow and looking back, is fit for the kingdom of God. So these are tests of discipleship. For those, it's a question of how strong is their commitment to the Lord. That I'll follow you wherever you go. Jesus says, even as uncomfortable and as that life is to be, Jesus led a life of poverty. Those who were going to follow him should not have been following him with the expectation that they were going to get rich. You know, even his disciples, right, had sometimes carried with them the false expectation that we're with Jesus now, but man, wait till Jesus comes into his kingdom. into his kingdom, then we'll see. Then we're going to be the big shots here in Israel. No, that's not what discipleship was going to be about. And also the idea here, these other comments that when people said, well, Lord, let me go take care of some other things and then I'll be ready to follow you. Now, Jesus, you know, those worldly things will take care of themselves. First, your first priority and the first focus has to be on him and his commitment to him, to Jesus. The response of a true disciple needs to be that of his first disciples. Huh? When Jesus found them on the shore, and Jesus says, and they found them there by their boats and their nets, and Jesus said, come follow me. And they left everything and they went and they followed him. Because there was nothing else that was comparable to what they had there in the person of Jesus Christ. Okay, let's look at a few of these parables. Matthew chapter 13. Go ahead and turn there. Here in a series of parables, Jesus has talked about the sower. He's talked about the tares. He's talked about the mustard seed and the leaven. And then we come to verse 44. Verse 44, and Jesus says, again, the kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and hid. And for joy over it, he goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. And again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant seeking beautiful pearls, who, when he had found one pearl of great price, he went and sold all that he had and bought it. This is a way of saying in a parable what we read in Luke chapter 9. And he said, what good is it of a man to gain the whole world but lose his soul? Right? This is that said in a parable. Whether it's a treasure that a man did not intend to find, but he found in verse 44, or whether it's like the merchant who's seeking the beautiful pearls, and when he finds what he's finally looking for, it's so precious he's willing to go and to sell everything that he has. And that needs to be how we see what Jesus brings to us. Right? It's what makes it worthwhile for us to deny ourselves and take up our cross daily. Right? It's because of the preciousness and the value of what's there in Jesus Christ, what it means, and what we have as his disciples. It's more valuable than anything else. Because is it going to take sacrifice to follow Jesus? Yeah. Are there things that we're going to have to deny ourselves that people in the world don't deny themselves? Yes. Yes, there are things, and we shouldn't pretend that there aren't. Right? There are sacrifices to be made. There are things that we give up. But the truth is that what we find is so much more precious than anything that you're asked to give up. Right? People say, is it worth it? Well, yeah. Yes, it is. The answer to that has to be yes. Is it worth all the sacrifice? Yes. What is it that people are looking for? People are looking for joy. People are looking for peace. People are looking for meaning. People are looking for fulfillment. All of those things, all of the existential desires and needs of man, those are all met in Jesus Christ. Those are all met in Jesus Christ and met in a way that they're intended to be. What is it that Jesus says about himself? Says, I have, in John chapter 10 and verse 10, he says, I have come that they may have life and that they may have it more abundantly. Yeah, Jesus wants you to give him everything, but what he wants to give you is what you've always been meant to have. Life, real life, and life more abundantly, and more rich than you could possibly have imagined. Life that's intended for us. Right? So is it costly? Do you have to give up something to be a disciple? Yes. But is it worth it? The promise of the gospel is yes. Yes, it is. And then finally, the parables there in Luke chapter 14. That Stuart read there in verses 28, let's say through 33. It says, "For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it, lest after he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish it, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, 'This man began to build and was not able to finish.' Or what king, going to make war against another king, does not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to meet him who comes against him with 20,000? Or else, while the other is still a great way off, he sends a delegation and asks conditions of peace. So likewise, whoever of you does not forsake all that he has cannot be my disciple." Now, this is another version of what Jesus said in Luke chapter 9, except said in a parable. Now, when he talked about the strength and the permanence of your commitment, you know, being that if you're gonna go and you're gonna follow him, that you can't turn back. You need to go forward. The idea here is that you have to count the cost. Now, as we've said, are there going to be sacrifices? Yes. Take those into account up front. Know what the cost is of what's being asked for you. Know what it is that you're going to have to give up. But also understand what it is that you're going to gain. So the idea of counting the cost, knowing what it is that you're getting into. Well, that's one of the reasons that we weren't too concerned that our boys, I guess most of them who obeyed the gospel from maybe around the time they were 17, and some even later, but that we wanted to make sure that we weren't too concerned about that. We wanted to make sure they understood exactly what it is that they're giving up. It's always a concern, and we've seen it even here with some who decide that later in life maybe they didn't really understand everything that was going on and everything that they committed to. Want to make sure of that, and have been baptized again. The important thing is that when you make that commitment, that you understand what it is that you're getting into. Understand what it is that you're going to have to deny to yourself. And truth is, for some people who've gotten themselves into pretty bad situations, to be a Christian, they're going to have to give up a lot. And it's not going to be easy. And those people need our compassion and need our support. But we need to be honest about that up front with them. We need to count the cost. As we said, the rewards are so much worth anything that you might have to give up. So it's certainly true. It's true before we come to the Lord. And as we said, as I mentioned at the beginning, it's also true collectively. And that's something we're going to talk about after we have the invitation. The invitation song, the collection. We'll do it with the announcements. As we look and as we plan the things that we do together to make sure that we go into those commitments, we go into those with our eyes open and understand what it is that we're committing to, and willingly make that commitment. It's true in following Christ, and it's true in the things that we're going to do concerning his work. But if you've not taken those steps, this morning, or if there is for some reason that you were not right with God, we want to offer you that invitation, the opportunity to make things right this morning. If you need the prayers of the church, if you need to take those steps and to obey the gospel, we'll work with you to do that. If you have any need whatsoever, we invite you to make those known, to come.